It was March 15th, 2014, when 21-year-old Chris Kremers and 22-year-old Lisanne Froon boarded a plane in Amsterdam on their way to Costa Rica, where they then took a boat to Panama. This was to be their new home for the next 6 weeks, while they learned about the country, took in the culture, and perfected the language. Volunteering at the local schools and with local charities, the girls had it all planned out. But their plans would take a drastic turn after an unguided hike took them deep into the jungles of Panama. What we know about what happens next just leaves us with more questions than answers. So it sounds like a typical episode, right? Let's get into it, guys. I'm your host, Michael, and this is Strange and Unexplained. Chris and Lisanne met while working together at a cafe. The two discovered that they had attended the same university, and they became friends very quickly, moving in together just weeks before their Panama trip. This was the girls' gap year, and they had planned to travel and learn Spanish, so for 6 weeks, the girls decided on Boquete, a small town in West Panama. Neither of them had been there and were looking forward to teaching in the area and learning Spanish, all while getting to explore a new part of the world. One very different from their Dutch home that they were used to. They were set to start volunteering at a school on April 1st. They arrived early in Boquete on March 29th and spent the next few days exploring the small town and getting familiar with the area. When the girls showed up at the school, it seemed a mistake had been made. They were not set to start until the next week, so they had to push their plans back a week. This really didn't change too much of their plans, but they did seem a little bit upset about it, which you could imagine. Now you're in a new country with a week of free time where you don't know anything or anybody, but I guess there's plenty to explore, right? Their host family and the school they were learning Spanish at, seeing as now they had the whole week free. Which, these activities included things such as hiking a volcano and touring a local coffee plantation. Those sound good. Those sound fun, right? Like the hike, the volcano one seems kind of sketch, but who wouldn't want to go see a coffee plantation in Panama, right? So on Tuesday, April 1st, they decided to visit the Pianista Trail. They took the host family dog that they were staying with, and they left out from their host family's home around 11 a.m., according to the family. In a Facebook post that morning, the girls said they were going walking around town that day. However, Chris texted her boyfriend and told him that they were indeed planning on going on a hike Tuesday. One source said a taxi driver claims he dropped the girls off at the trailhead around 1:30 p.m., but pictures taken on the girls' phones showed that they started hiking in the early morning hours. This could be easily explained, I guess, just from the taxi driver maybe getting the time wrong. I'm not really sure about that, but that does seem odd. If he dropped them off at the trailhead at 1:30, how are there pictures of them hiking already on the camera early in the morning? Because the camera timestamps all the photos, obviously. Their host family was worried when they didn't return that night and even went out in the town looking for them, but ultimately decided to return home. They thought the girls were probably just out and would return eventually. However, the next day they failed to show up to a scheduled tour, and that is when the alarm was raised. The guide called the school to let them know the girls didn't show, and the school contacted the girls' parents and the police. The search for the girls started on April 3rd, just 2 days after their hike. Extensive searches were done of the area, including aerial searches, large volunteer group canvases, and bloodhounds, but not a trace of the girls was found. Both Chris and Lisanne's parents, along with detectives from the Netherlands, flew to Panama and assisted in the search for more than 10 days. They also offered up a reward of $30,000 to no prevail. But finally, the first piece of evidence was found 10 weeks after the initial search. A couple spotted a bag on the side of a creek bed on their land and notified authorities, who then sent out officers to recover the bag. It was quickly identified as Lisanne's, and it was found 5 miles from the trail in the opposite direction in which they had set out, which put them a total of about 10 miles from their host family's home. Police were curious when they arrived and found the bag on the side of the river because the bag was dry and it had just rained the day before. And supposedly this bag had washed up on the side of the river? That makes no sense. But that's what the woman told the police just the day before. Inside of the bag was a handful of neatly organized and clean items, which was very odd for something that had been left in the jungle for 10 weeks or even spent time in the river. The bag contained the girl's money, approximately $86, one passport, Lassands. The money was not U.S. dollars. I'm just saying it's the equivalent of about $86. I'm not sure how much money was left in there or if it was currency suitable for to Panama or if it was Netherland currency. I'm not sure. I would imagine they would obviously have the local currency for Panama. But either way, it equaled out to about $86. So still worth taking. If this was a robbery or someone had ill intent, $86 I think is still worth shoving in your pocket. But I don't know. There was one passport left. It was Lassand's. There were two bras, a water bottle, two pairs of sunglasses, and Chris's medical insurance card. There was also a Canon digital camera, and both of the girls' phones were recovered in the bag. Discovery of the bag kicked off another search of the area, and some of the girls' clothes were found on the side of the creek. Some think the girls followed the river hoping to find someone, but ended up going in the wrong direction after getting lost, and that's why they ended up so far from their original starting point. When the phones were examined, parts of the story really began to unfold. It was discovered that the girls had made distress calls just 3 hours after starting their hike, probably just after reaching the top of the trail. They were dialing Dutch emergency number of 112. Now, if you dial that, it should automatically transfer you to the local emergency number. That's something I learned while studying this case, is that, say, you're visiting another country and there's an emergency and you don't know their number, you can dial the emergency number in your country and it will actually transfer you to their emergency services, which is pretty amazing. So they dialed 112 and then they even dialed 911, which is the American version of 112. So, they did this on Lisanne's phone, and the phone was shown connected to a tower for about 36 seconds, but nothing was able to be recorded at all as far as any type of words, any type of distress signal, nothing before the signal was lost again. Phone records also showed that the phones were connected for just moments over the next few days, cutting on and attempting calls and then shutting back off. Which makes sense. If you're trapped in the forest, you want to preserve your phone battery for as long as you can. But by the fifth day, Lisanne's phone batteries had finally died. Some speculate they were checking for service, or maybe the time, while they were lost in the jungle, turning the phones off to extend the battery life. On the sixth, there were multiple attempts to log into Chris's iPhone, and she gets locked out of the phone a few times. And the correct code was never entered after that. Okay, here's what I find really strange about this. If you don't know a code to a phone, you can still make an emergency call. And I think pretty much everyone who's had a cell phone is aware of that. You don't need to log into the phone to make an emergency call. So why was this person trying to log into Chris's phone? Right? I mean, even if it's Lassand, Why does she need to know her code to get into the phone? That's odd to me. Many speculate Lisanne was trying to access Chris's phone and didn't know the key. And since Lisanne was more familiar with Samsung, she didn't know how to access the emergency call feature. It could be. Chris had an iPhone, but I don't know. I think that she would have realized how to make an emergency call. And you see that when you open any phone to the lock screen or to the screen with a code or the draw a symbol or whatever the hell kind of lock screen you have, At the bottom of the screen or at the top, it says press for emergency call or slide up to make emergency call or whatever. So I don't know. I don't know if I believe that. From two young girls in 2014, I don't know about that. And of course, we have to entertain the aspect of this case that maybe it wasn't Lisanne at all that had Chris's phone, and maybe there is another culprit here in this case. Maybe there's another person here with them, either following them or holding them captive, and maybe they let them use their phones for a little bit because they knew they had no service. They knew nothing was going to happen. I don't know. Maybe someone was just trying to access Lisa's phone, or Chris's phone, I'm sorry, but who knows? Either way, emergency calls are made from the phone a few days later. April 7th through the 10th, a total of 77 emergency calls were made, but none of them connected. Chris's phone was turned on once more on the 11th, stayed on for a few minutes, and then never turned on again. The camera recovered in the girl's bag showed the girls reached the top of the hiking trail around 1 p.m. Isn't that strange? The taxi driver said he dropped them off at 1:30. How they reach the top of the trail at 1 p.m. if they got there at 1:30? See what I mean? That timestamp is way off. There are many photos of the girls at the top of the mountain, and they are smiling and posing. A few more photos of the girls in areas of the jungle near a ravine or like a creek, and the camera is not used again until April 8th. Around 1 a.m., 90 photos were taken in the dark with the camera's flash. This is so weird. Between 1 a.m. and 4 a.m., 90 photos were taken. And it's just random stuff. The photos are of the ground and scenery. One shows what is believed to be the back of Chris's head. And some people speculate that there's blood in her hair a little bit. But I couldn't tell. I didn't, from the picture, one of the YouTube videos I watched really tried to push this narrative, like, oh, look at the back of her head. There's tiny flakes of blood in there and stuff. And I'm not so sure about that. It did look like a really odd photo, really close to someone's head. But it could be the top. It could be the top of one of the girls' heads. It could be the back, but it was definitely a part of the head that was covered in hair, and the hair looked just a mess. So that was very odd. But at this point, these girls have been in this jungle for days. So, I mean, it just makes sense. Some people speculate they were either trying to use the light to get around or try to get attention from someone. See, I don't think it was to get around. Who would use a flash to get around in a jungle? That doesn't make any sense to me. You're just going to flash and be like, oh, yeah, I think it's over here. I just saw there's kind of a trail going through here, but I know there's a tree right here, so kind of watch out for it. No. I don't think anybody is trying to make their way through a jungle with the flash. And if you were, I think it would take a lot more than 90 photos to be walking while using a flash. But I think they were indeed trying to signal or get attention in the woods. Maybe they were using it to scare off animals or predators. I mean, because this is the Panama jungle. There's no telling what's out there. I'm sure there's plenty of big cats, large snakes. And that's just the least of their problems, I'm sure. There were searches being done since day one, so it's possible that the girls were hearing the search parties. Some of the groups were sending up flares, so it's possible they saw them and attempted to use the flash of the camera to signal back. However, another very viable hypothesis is that one of the girls was attempting to document the location. Maybe they were at a point where they couldn't go any further. And they were tired, and they were hungry, and they were worn out. Or maybe one of the girls had passed and was unconscious, and the other one didn't want to leave her. And so they thought, let's send these flashes out. Let's try to get people's attention. Let's at least document where we are and where we were if someone happens to find this camera. So, interesting to note, there was a photo deleted, number 509. We're not sure if it was deleted intentionally by the girls or if it was deleted later by someone else. One photo being deleted, I don't really look into that much. I'm thinking the girls took a lot of selfies and stuff. Maybe they took some bad ones. They're like, delete that, right? I feel like that happens a lot. But this is the photo between the ones taken during their hike and the ones taken at night with the flash. That's the little bit of it that kind of makes me wonder what the hell was in that photo, right? Because, like I said, it was taken after all the hike photos, a good time after, and before all the crazy ones taken between 1 a.m. and 4 a.m. So, I've seen several articles that claim the photo was totally deleted from the memory card and could not be recovered, and the only way to do this is to hook the camera to a computer. But I couldn't verify that. If it is true, that would indicate that at some point the camera was connected to a computer and the photos gone through, with this one being the only one deleted. Although police had all of this, they were still no closer to finding Chris and Lisanne. The search only turned up a few articles of clothing and no more indication of what happened. 2 months after the discovery of the backpack, searchers began to discover human remains scattered throughout the jungle. These are the remains that were found. A piece of a pelvic bone. A boot with a foot still inside, where it seemed to be cut clean at the ankle. 33 scattered bone fragments were discovered spread over a large area. This was confirmation of death, no doubt. It was the end of August, so they were already assumed dead, as there was no evidence that they had been abducted. Experts in the case said the remains seemed decomposed beyond what they should have been, but that Chris's bones seemed clean. Some even said bleached, but that could have happened due to sun exposure over time. There was chemical residue found on the bones that seemed to be consistent with lime. Some of the experts claim it was naturally occurring. I believe so as well. It was also noted by one expert the lack of scratches on the bones, both natural or instrumental. The bones were smooth and clean. But just Chris's bones seemed odd. Lisanne's seemed to align with the natural cause of death and natural element exposure. The official ruling was that the girls had fallen into the river when attempting to cross what is known as a monkey bridge, which is just a small wire and wood bridge found often in areas like the ones the girls were walking in. I'm not so sure about that, though. This bridge? They fell off a bridge? It just doesn't make sense. I guess in a way it could. If Chris maybe fell off the bridge and... Oh my God, I hate to say this, but what if they were stranded out there, Chris fell off the bridge, was incapacitated, she died, maybe knocked unconscious for whatever reason, and Lisanne cut her up. I don't know. She was probably starving and delusional. Who knows how long she was out there, alone or with an incapacitated partner. It's dark, I know. But I think at some point in time, these girls, one of them, if not both of them, probably drifted into insanity, being out there, being starving, being terrified. Could you imagine the anxiety being trapped out there? And then if your only friend out there gets hurt or is incapacitated somehow and can't move forward, can't go, then you would feel even more stranded. You would feel more responsible for them. This is a really strange case. I'm still trying to put the pieces together to give myself a decent hypothesis, and this case is just so strange. It's like at one point I feel like, oh, they were just attacked by animals, you know, when you see the bone fragments and whatnot, but then you look at the foot that was cut clean. That doesn't make sense, right? It doesn't make sense that the foot was just cut clean off at the ankle. Nice and clean severed, not chewed off. Okay? And then there was no bite marks on the other bones. So that also seems odd, to say the least. Does this taxi driver have anything to do with it? Why is his timestamp so weird? Right? How do you confuse 1:30 with, let's say, what was probably 10:30? I don't know, maybe you're looking at the clock, you didn't see the other zero? I don't understand how it could have happened. But, I mean, a lot of people have clocks, you know, that show all the numbers. So when it's 1:30, maybe it's 0130. And then when it, you know, then obviously if it was 10, maybe it was 1030. And maybe this gentleman, you know, misread it. a little bit of dyslexia. I think we've all had moments like that. But that really sticks out to me. That's odd. When he says he drops them off at 1:30 p.m., but yet they're taking pictures at the top of the mountain at 1 p.m. That's odd. I don't know what he has to gain from lying about that. But there's no evidence of anyone else being involved in these girls' crimes or being responsible for their deaths. And I don't really know where to go from here. This really is one of the strangest and most unexplained cases I think I have ever done. I would love to hear you guys' theories. I'd love to hear what you think. But for now, let's hear what Lauren has to say in this week's Lauren's Synopsis. It's time for Lauren. It's time for Lauren's Synopsis. Breaking down the case like cardboard boxes. It's time for Lauren. It's time for Lauren's Synopsis. Breaking down the case like cardboard boxes. It's time for Lauren. It's time for Lauren's Synopsis. Breaking down the case like cardboard boxes.
What's up, people? Lauren here. Here to get my thoughts on this week's Strange and Unexplained. The mysterious disappearance and deaths of Chris Kremers and Lise Ann Froon, two young Dutch women who in 2014 took a six-week trip that they had planned for over 6 months to Panama, where they were going to learn Spanish and work with the local children. During their trip to Panama that spring, they went on a little hike through the jungle. It was just supposed to be a few hours. The hiking trail was well marked. It was not a particularly tough hike, and they were experienced hikers. Unfortunately, they never came out of that jungle, and a lot of clues were left behind over the following weeks and months. Agony, of course, for the family members of these two beautiful young women, when weeks and months would go by without hearing from them, and they would assume the worst, and eventually that would end up being their fears would come to reality when their bodies, what was left of their bodies, their remains, basically skeletal remains, were found scattered along a riverbank months later. But so many clues were found. First, a backpack with many of their belongings in it, neatly packed, found along a river's edge, but perfectly dry somehow. Inside, both of their bras, a digital camera with 100 photos on it. Some of their trip was on it, you know, their little hike. They were very happy in the photo, smiling together. And then the pictures got dark, and the dark pictures were a week later. They were taken a week later at night, like 60 photos at night, very cryptic, odd photos of dirt and rocks and the back of Chris's head, apparently. These pictures, in my opinion, were taken by a killer, the person who ended their lives, unfortunately, in my opinion. And there was one photo which was deleted, found to be deleted from the camera, and it was between daytime, the day of their hike, and those nighttime pictures a week later. And speculation is abound about what that photo could be. To me, that had to have been them taking a photo of someone that was following them, and that person would go on to kill them and delete the picture after seeing it on the camera. And this person, I believe, is a serial killer. And the reason I believe that was because the bones of their remains were found, and there were other bones that weren't theirs in that same location. We've seen this before with like Ted Bundy. He had a location he liked to take his victims to in the woods in Washington State. And he liked to leave, you know, basically a graveyard of his victims out there. And I think that we're dealing with a serial killer here. There was so many things that were left behind. And I think this is a person who revisits these sites. I think that this person stalked them, killed them, and the things were found scattered as well. Like the backpack was found at a different location from their bones. Their phone was clearly used by the killer to try and get it. The killer tried to get into their phone. The passcode was attempted to be used multiple times 5 days after their initial hike and their disappearance. The day of their hike, there was attempted phone calls to emergency services. If you think that they had a hiking accident, one of them fell, both of them fell, You're out of your mind. If you think they were attacked by a wild animal, you're out of your mind. I mean, they were, in a sense, they were attacked by a wild animal human being, someone who is a predator, I believe to be a serial killer working in the Panama area. And hopefully there's not more people. I know this was like 7 years ago, but, yeah, I wouldn't want to hike that trail if I were a young woman. That's my thoughts. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I know I didn't get into a ton of the details, but I'm sure Michael tackled all those details for you. I just wanted to give you my thoughts on what I think happened. After studying it extensively, all the details, the phone records, the digital photos, looking through all of those, I believe this is absolutely a killer, potentially a serial killer. And I found it a little bit odd as well that the local law there seems to just try to cover it up like it's just, they just had an accident. There's no way you could possibly think this was a hiking accident. How does all this stuff, all of this evidence turn up? The backpack with their bras and stuff, did they fall on their hike and then take their bras off and put it in a backpack with all of their stuff and float it down a river? None of that makes sense. How did all these dark pictures at night happen a week after their disappearance? Who was trying to get into their phone? Did they suddenly forget their passcode? I mean, none of that makes sense. The only thing that makes sense is that they were murdered, 100%. And the killer got away with it, unfortunately. And I don't know. I don't think we'll ever get closure as far as who did it. They're not going to come out and say they did it. And they potentially have killed since and before, in my opinion. That's my thoughts. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Terrible case. Be careful when you go hiking. Bring a gun with you. We've talked about it on True Crime Guys. There's killers out there that work hiking trails and stuff. I know you want to get one with nature and stuff, but there's still sometimes predators out there aside from animals. So that's my thoughts. See you next time.
All right. Well, there you go, guys. Lauren's not buying the bullshit about some falling off a bridge nonsense. It doesn't make sense. It really doesn't. The only thing that makes sense is that they encountered someone in those woods that day. It really does. It makes a lot of sense as to that's a great point Lauren made about them maybe trying to get a picture of him. Maybe while they were in this campsite, or maybe while they were at the place wherever those dark pictures were taken, while they were there, maybe they were still being stalked at that point, and they just felt like they were going insane. Or maybe someone chased them off of the beaten path in the first place. And then once they were out into the jungle, they were dead. They were dead. They were sitting ducks. This, like Lauren talked about, if other remains were spread out among this area, which I was unaware of, that was something that was new to me. I'm going to be honest. That changes everything. Someone visited this area. Why haven't the other remains been identified? And then as far as the bras being in the backpack and all that stuff folded up, I don't think that is quite as sadistic and suspicious as so many people say. I feel like that would have been one of the first things the girls did, right? If you're in the forest for a few days on your own, if you're in this jungle, I mean, if you find a nice stream, a beautiful clear stream, maybe you just want to rinse off. And then what's the point in putting your bras back on? I mean, most women hate wearing bras anyways. You're out in the jungle in the middle of nowhere. I think you would just kind of put that stuff in your bag, and you're probably burning up as well. So as far as the bras being all neat and clean and put in the bag with some of the other clothes, that doesn't seem that alarming to me. That seems like something they may have done on their own while in the woods, or maybe not. Maybe they were taken advantage of, and maybe much more sinister things were at play. I think there definitely was more sinister things at play as far as the death. But in regards to everything else, I mean, this obviously wasn't a robbery. They didn't steal anything, but they did steal one passport, right? There was only one passport left in the backpack. So one passport was missing. So that's strange. But guys, I mean, that's just one of the few strange things about this case. Let me know what you think. If you guys think there's a serial killer out there in Panama, it definitely sounds like there's something going on out there. It just doesn't seem right, like with the clean cut on the foot bone. But if that one thing wasn't found, it'd be really easy to blame it on animals. But like Lauren said too, with the phones and being locked out of the phone, it could have been Lisann trying to get into Chris's phone. It very well could have been, or vice versa. But I don't think that was the case. I think these girls would have known how to use each other's phones. And if not, I feel like there would be some point in time where they could ask each other how to use their phones or what was the code. That just doesn't seem liable to me. So unfortunately, I think Lauren is right on this one. I think these girls met nefarious ends with someone who meant them harm. So hopefully this killer will be caught. Hopefully this doesn't continue to happen in Panama. And like Lauren said, I mean, if you guys travel, or even if you just hike in your own town, if you hike in your own state, your own country, whatever, you still need to be prepared. You still need to be prepared. I'd say if possible, take some sort of protection with you. Take some sort of protection. It's definitely worth it. Could save your life, no doubt. All right, guys. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I hope you're enjoying this podcast in general. And if you are, please leave a review. I'd love to give you guys a shout if you leave a 5-star review and write me a little something. I will do my best to give you guys a shout out on the very next episode, like I'm going to do for these 3 reviews that I've got this past week. Thank you so much from Cowboyed911. At the 5-star review said the only thing that might make it better would be a synopsis at the end. Oh, wait. Fire. Right? Also, thank Days73 said interesting show, great topics. Thank you very much. Also, JazzMay1998 left a 5-star review, said, came over from True Crime Guys. I absolutely love this. I listen at work, and it makes the night shift go by so fast. This is pretty good. It says, the first time I heard the synopsis thing song, I had to laugh because I make boxes. Right on, right on. So you're making boxes, and Lauren's breaking them down. Lauren's breaking them down for you. So I appreciate that very much, guys. Those reviews really help the show. It helps other listeners kind of get an idea of what they're in for. I appreciate that very much. Another great way to help this show is patreon.com/SNU podcast. Guys, for just $3 a month, you get access to early releases of this show every Thursday instead of waiting till Monday. And you also get access to 2 other shows that I do on, I'm doing more on a regular basis, of Strange Shorts and also The Palate Cleanser. Some of you who are already patrons, you'll be happy to know that I already have up to 2 weeks of Strange Shorts pre-recorded. I plan to release those on Mondays. So check this out. So if you join Patreon and you miss your Monday releases, don't sweat, because now you'll get your Thursday release of Sandu on the original episodes, like this episode. And then on Mondays, you'll get an episode of Strange Shorts. So you'll still get your Monday fix of True Crime Guys Productions, as well as Thursday. And then if you are a True Crime Guys listener as well, so you'll have Wednesday, Thursdays, and Mondays. And then just the banter for True Crime Guys on Fridays. So it's just the whole end of your week will just be packed with goodness. But thank you guys so much. I want to give a big shout out to Daisy Ramirez and Laura Support. I'm sorry, Laura, if I mispronounced your last name. But thank you guys so much for joining Patreon this week. And you guys, your stickers will be in the mail if you are a $5 tier or higher. But either way, I thank you for your support so much. You guys, you don't understand, Patreon is the number one way to support this podcast. It's the best way to support any creators that you love. Any creators, if you love their content, if you love what they're doing, see if they have a Patreon, because that is the best way to support them directly. So, guys, also, check out the merch. I just created a new merch design in the last week for Strange and Unexplained, as well as True Crime Guys. But it's like a mock band flyer design, which I kind of like. I used to love making those. I played live music back in the day a lot, and I used to love making the flyers for the show, you know, to put up. You put them on your local pubs or whatnot and post them around town. You know, good times, good times. But yeah, so I made a mock design for a flyer as if Strange and Unexplained was going to be doing a live show, which we are not, at least not at the moment. So who knows? In the future, maybe, or maybe I'll start broadcasting live if I feel so inclined to do that and embarrass the hell out of myself. But we'll see how it goes, right? But guys, thank you so much. Oh, the merch, truecrimeguys.threadless.com, right? It's great to plug merch and then not tell you where you can get it. truecrimeguys.threadless.com. And guys, there's always a link to all the things that I plug right below the description of this very episode. So if you guys don't mind, give that a click, check it out. That way you can let other people know how much you love TCG Productions and what we got going on here. Okay? All right, guys. Until next time, I'll be back with a strange and unexplained case. But until then, be strange. Just don't be strangers out there.